Good morning. Thanks for being patient with us amateurs. Wes will be back next week, so you're almost done with us. But we do appreciate you sticking with us. It's an old Chinese curse that you might have heard. It says, may you live in interesting times. Do we or do we not live in interesting times? I think the problem, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. And everything has just been straight downhill from there. And I'm saying that as from a place of love because I am a Chiefs fan. But wow, have things gone south since then. This will be an incomplete list, but we've got a pandemic going on. If you remember, it doesn't affect us much in the middle of the country, but we've had all kinds of hurricanes. It's been a bad year for hurricanes. We've had wildfires, we've had riots and all kinds of social unrest. And then the election, which may or may not be over. So that's just a few of the things that have made this year a mess. But it's almost over. 2020 is nearly over. We've got a month left. But I think that the way people think about it is all the bad things are in 2020, right? That's become kind of the meme that says, well, if something went wrong, it's just 2020. I've got some news for you. 2021 might not be any better. It's true. There's no guarantee. In fact, it could get a lot worse. I have a history degree, and I love history, and that's probably the most consistent lesson you can learn from studying history is that things can always get worse. There may be a few of you left. Was anyone in here born in the 1920s? Probably not. Some of you, maybe in the 1930s. You guys know about hard times. That's when my grandparents were born. Save that for later. We'll come back to that. Got slightly ahead of myself. Okay, so let's rewind 1 year. Backwards from today. So the end of November 2019, if you had known what was coming in 2020, what would you have done? That was the second thing on my list. Good job. There you go. Bought stock in Charmin. There you go. I think that's a Johnson & Johnson company. Anyway, you would have saved some more money. Maybe. You might have filled up your freezer because meat got scarce there for a while. You might have bought the big jug of hand sanitizer at the Sam's Club, right? I think it's kind of a symptom of the way that I think about the world, that if I have the right stuff, in terms of physical items, right, I'll be ready for whatever comes if I have the right stuff. And everybody, we all need stuff to get by, right? And stuff is generally acquired with money. We spend money to buy food and to buy that, it's the infamous toilet paper and all these things. But we need more than stuff to get through hard times. So the question is, where do I go to get the qualities of character that help me survive hard times? Where do I buy wisdom? I know they don't sell it at Walmart. Maybe Target? I don't know. Bed Bath & Beyond? Probably not there. Where do I go to get patience? Where do I buy perseverance and discipline? Where do I buy the ability to trust the Lord in hard times? The bad news is you can't buy those things no matter how much money you have. The only way that you can acquire those things is to suffer. You get to live through hard things, and you learn lessons from living through hard things. To return to an earlier point just briefly, ask anybody who grew up in the 1930s. That was the worst of the Great Depression. If you grew up out west in Kansas, where I grew up, we also had an ecological disaster called the Dust Bowl, where the entire middle of the country sort of blew away. And the reward for surviving those things for my grandparents was then to live through a world war. It helps us to keep that in perspective. What do we call those people now? I can hear you say it. The greatest generation. How did they get to be that way? Because life beat on them. Right? I still have one living grandparent, but all of my grandparents grew up in that era. And by the time I experienced them as grandparents, they all had something to offer in terms of how to live through hard times. But I know that I'm particularly lucky in that I get to have people in my life who I can look to as examples who are here now. Okay, and I know that not everybody has that. Okay, but we all have the Bible. So we can look in the Bible and we can find someone who lived through some hard times, and maybe we can learn a lesson or two. To that end, we're going to talk about Joseph this morning. He had some ups and downs, shall we say, in the book of Genesis. But before we get too far into Joseph, I want to make just a little note about his family. Sometimes people sort of set Bible characters apart as this sort of strange and exalted class of people. But if you actually read the Bible, and particularly the book of Genesis, you'll know that Joseph's family was really complicated and full of knuckleheads, I believe is the technical term for that. But these are the people that God chose to bring his word and later his son into the world. Okay? So don't give up on your situation just yet. These people aren't that different from you. Okay? Okay, find myself here. So Joseph is the son of Jacob. So we got Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. Okay? So if that sort of places you in the sort of in history just a little bit. Joseph was one of his father's favorites because his mother was Rachel, who was his father's favorite wife. Yes, I said favorite wife. He had more than one. In fact, he had two wives and some concubines on the side. And if you can imagine, that would make for sort of, we use the term blended family now, right? Like, this is blended family to, whatever you'd say, a lot. This is makes that look pretty tame, right? And he only had one full sibling, who was Benjamin. Those were the two sons of Rachel. And all the rest of his brothers were half-brothers, okay? You don't get really any background on Joseph. The only thing you know is that he's late in the birth order, second to last. And then the Bible jumps into his story when he's 17 years old, okay? And that begins in Genesis 37. So if you want to turn there, that's fine, or it will be on the overhead. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph. Now, just a note, Israel is also Jacob. They're the same guy. It's one of those people with two names in the Bible that are just there to confuse you. Okay. More than any of his sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him, and they could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dreams and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun, the moon, and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him, said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So we're 10 verses into the story, and you could tell already that we're going to have a fight, right? Joseph's brothers don't like him. And you would think that someone who grew up with 11 brothers and very little adult supervision would have gotten the memo on the snitches get stitches thing, but apparently Joseph missed that one. Okay? He's talking about, he's made his brothers even more jealous of him by the way he tells them about his dreams. We know sort of where the story's going, right? We know the end of the story, so for us it's like, ooh, that's foreshadowing. That's cool, we learned about that in school. But they didn't know that. To them, it was just annoying. And it was another reason for them to not like Joseph. And they got their chance. They got their chance to get him before too long. Jacob sent Joseph to go check up on his brothers, which maybe that's sort of the tattletale thing coming into play there. They were off herding the family sheep. Joseph went to go check on them, and they saw him coming, probably because of that fancy robe that he liked to wear that his father gave him. They saw him coming, and they hatched a plot to kill him. But at the end, sort of when it came down to it, Reuben, who is the oldest brother of the 12, says, let's not kill him, let's just dump him in a cistern, which is a hole in the ground for holding water in dry places. Okay, so we'll dump him in the cistern, he won't be able to get out. We won't actually have to kill him, but we can let him die. Okay, well, that's the good brother. That's the brother that saved his life, was the one that says, let's not kill him, let's just make sure he dies. Okay. But at the last minute, so he's down in the cistern, and who do they see coming but some Ishmaelites? Lest we forget, Ishmael is a son of Abraham, and the sort of the extended family group, the tribe that he sired, these are, if I have this calculated correctly, this is Joseph's half-great uncle. Okay? It's all the same family. I'm not saying he would have known these people, but they're related to him, okay? And they're willing to buy him and sell him into slavery. So you think your family's bad? It could always get worse, okay? So Joseph ends up being taken to Egypt and sold to a guy named Potiphar, who was the captain of the guard for Pharaoh. Let's continue on with the scripture. Genesis 39:2-6. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care with Joseph in charge. He did not concern himself with anything except the food that he ate. Well, Joseph's kind of landed on his feet, hasn't he? Apparently he was, we're sort of learn about Joseph's character as we move into the story. What kind of person was Joseph? So far I think we know two things about him, and you can put these in either order. The first is that he's a hard worker. He was apparently a conscientious servant in Potiphar's household to have been put in the position that he was put in, okay? And the second is that God is with him. God blesses what Joseph does. Is one of those things because of the other one? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. It seems unlikely to me that God would have blessed Joseph in the way that he did, if what he did was sort of the ancient equivalent of shopping on Amazon and eating Cheetos on the couch, right? It seems that those two things go together, that his hard work and conscientiousness and the Lord's blessing are sort of inseparable from one another in this case. Those things are going good for Joseph. He started at the bottom. I don't know how you get any lower socially than being a slave, but he's already working his way up. I think maybe the best thing that I could say about any job that I've ever had is if my boss noticed that I did a good job, I'll do anything for you if you tell me good job. That's just the way I'm wired. And I suspect that a lot of you feel the same. Joseph got rewarded with responsibility and with notice. Really, he's doing well. But you guys know there's a wrench in this story, right? Potiphar's wife took a shine to Joseph. And be careful how I say this. She wanted to know Joseph better in the biblical sense. And Joseph refused. And he refused again. And he refused and ran away. So quickly that, in fact, he left his robe in her hand. He ran out from, sort of ran away from her. And she didn't like that. So she made up a story that Joseph had tried to rape her and told Potiphar. Potiphar, of course, was angry, as you might expect, and threw Joseph in prison. Has Joseph done anything wrong here? He did the only right thing he could do. What happened to him was not his fault. Okay? He really is a victim of circumstance. I'm a lot better at continuing forward when I know that I'm the one that made the mistake. I hate when things are out of my control. And I probably would have been tended to sort of quit in this situation and just spend some time moping. But that's not what Joseph did. It was a built-in part of his character and his approach to life that he was going to be careful and conscientious with whatever was close to him. And so it became known that he was that kind of person, and the warden, just like Potiphar, started putting him in charge of things. And pretty soon he was sort of the head trustee in the prison, taking care of all of the sort of the day-to-day running of the prison. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success at whatever he did. Well, we've heard that before. Some time goes by. We don't know exactly how long. It doesn't specify. But Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker offended him. That seems like sort of a mild word to me, offended. Like the worst thing I might do is give you a little 30-day break on Facebook, right? You know what? You guys know what I'm talking about if you offended me. But in this particular case, Pharaoh throws them in prison for having offended him. And these people were not, like, they're servants of Pharaoh, but they're pretty important people, really. They're people that would have had access to Pharaoh that could have put in a good word for somebody or something like that. Okay, so don't think of these people as being the guys that are taking out the trash, okay? And while they were in prison, the cupbearer and the baker, they started having strange dreams. We'll go to Genesis 48 to 18, and let's read about those dreams. "We both had dreams," they answered, "but there is no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer told Joseph his dream. He said to him, "In my dream I saw a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches. As soon as it budded, it blossomed, and its clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and squeezed them into his cup and put the cup in his hand." "This is what it means," Joseph said to him. "The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your position, and you will put Pharaoh's cup in his hand, just as you used to do when you were his cupbearer. But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing wrong. Excuse me, done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon. When the chief baker saw that Joseph had given a favorable interpretation, he said to Joseph, I too had a dream. On my head were three baskets of bread. In the top basket were all kinds of baked goods for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head. This is what it means, Joseph said. The three baskets are 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift off your head and impale your body on a pole, and the birds will eat your flesh. Whew. Thanks. We're going to have a drink break here. Hold on just a second. This is dry work, in case you've never done it. And that's exactly what happened. Somebody can interpret dreams, and then the things actually happen that they interpret. You begin to give them a little bit of credibility. But, in fact, you would think that the cupbearer would have remembered Joseph, right? I mean, this is sort of what got him out of prison. But he didn't. He forgot Joseph. And through no fault of his own, Joseph got to spend 2 more years being a trustee in prison. But about that time, Pharaoh started having dreams. And lo and behold, that sort of jogged the cupbearer's memory. And he says, oh, hold on, I know a guy. I know a guy who does this dream interpretation thing. Okay? And remember, like sort of Pharaoh, if you're Pharaoh, it's a pretty good gig, right? You got lots of people that work for you. You got lots of people that do different things. And he had people that worked for him whose job description included dream interpretation. Okay? It's not like there weren't other people around to do this job, but none of them could actually give the interpretation. They didn't understand what was going on. Okay? So you can imagine that sort of the word goes out through the palace that Pharaoh's real grumpy because he's had these dreams. And by the way, if you offend him, he might just throw you in jail. Well, we've got to solve this problem fast. And the cupbearer says, ooh, yes, that Hebrew guy in the jail knows what's going on here. That Pharaoh's dreams were pretty wild. He had two of them. First one was about cows. And there were 7 sleek, fat cows that came up out of the river, okay, in his dream. And then they were eaten by 7 skinny, gaunt cows. That in and of itself would give you, ugh, that's more of a nightmare than a dream. I grew up on a ranch, and the idea of one cow eating another is a little disturbing. And then, so you can imagine that he wakes up from this dream in a cold sweat. Whew, it was just a dream. And then he goes back to sleep, but then he has another dream. And this time there's a stalk of wheat that grows up, and it's got 7 big, fat, nice heads on it, but then 7 little shriveled heads grow up and eat those too. Also disturbing, slightly less disturbing than the cows. But when he tells the people these dreams, they can't figure it out. Here comes Joseph. Joseph says, well, Pharaoh, I'm not smart enough to figure this out for you, but God has told me that this is what's going on. The seven fat cows and the 7 heads of wheat are 7 good years. There's going to be 7 years of bumper harvests, and then there's going to be 7 years of famine. And there's going to be people starving to death. And so Pharaoh says, well, what should we do? Which seems like a strange question to ask a prisoner, but this is the credibility that Joseph earned for himself by giving an honest interpretation. And Pharaoh says, what should we do? And Joseph says, well, here's what we'll do. During the 7 years when things are good, we will save food so that when the 7 bad years come, we'll have things to eat. And you need to appoint somebody who's trustworthy and smart to do this job. Joseph did not say, you should appoint me to do this job because I'm trustworthy and smart. He just said, you should appoint somebody. And Pharaoh also recognized, like really everyone else, who, other than his brothers, who did, which is funny in and of itself. But all these other people have recognized that that God is with Joseph, right? And Pharaoh is no different. And so he appoints Joseph to be the person in charge of all of that. Genesis 41, 39 to 45. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you." So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger, put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen, put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and people shouted before him, "Make way." Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Whew, that's quite the jump. It would be to go from prison to the number two man in the whole kingdom. And it's not like Egypt is some sort of out-of-the-way little corner, right? This is one of the premier civilizations of the world. And now Joseph, who is a foreigner and started as a slave and then became a prisoner, is now the number two man in the kingdom. So I've told as much of the story of Joseph as I'm going to tell this morning. There's a lot more cool stuff that happens after this, okay? You're going to have to read it on your own. But one point that I want to make out of what comes next is that at some point, Joseph's brothers are going to show back up. Okay? When the 7 years of famine hits, Joseph's brothers are going to come back. And they're going to, and they're not come back because they've never been to Egypt before. Excuse me. They're going to come to Egypt to try to buy food. Okay? And Joseph is going to have the opportunity for the best revenge anybody's ever thought of. Okay? But he's not going to do it. And I think that says something interesting about his ability to handle prosperity, too. Okay? Sometimes it's a little bit, like, I'm not going to say it's easier, but it's easy to trust God when things are bad because you don't have anywhere else to go. But Joseph's character remained intact when things were good. When seemingly he would no longer have to trust God and would have the opportunity to have revenge on his brothers with no one to save them. You understand? It's just up to his whim what he wanted to do to his brothers. Okay? And he didn't kill them. And he didn't string them up. And he didn't drag them through the streets. In fact, God used Joseph to make a spot for his family to be during the famine so that they would not starve to death. And later on, in fact, they will spend, that family group will grow into a nation over the next 400 years protected by Egypt. Because if they'd been left in the neighborhood, like Israel is a tough neighborhood now, it was then too, okay? If they had been left to try to grow into a nation there, the Assyrians or perhaps the Egyptians or the Babylonians would just have sort of rubbed them out, okay? But God placed them in Egypt so that they could grow up, okay? So that they could grow into a nation capable of taking care of themselves. There's probably a whole sermon there, but I'm only preaching one today. So, and this is the part of the sermon where you have the points, right? And there's only supposed to be three of them, but I added one. There's four. Sorry. The first of those is that there is no strength without resistance. Chad Parker, I saw you smile when I said that. There's a lot of different ways to illustrate this point, but the only way to get strong, physically strong, is to wear out the muscles that you have. You can ask my son about this. He We're a month into his first experience with weightlifting, and so he goes to the gym four times a week, and he gets tired and sore, and he's learning what it takes, what the investment you have to make in order to make progress. But you don't start at the top. You start with what you have. The only way to make progress is to use what you have. In the sense that I'm talking about, I think that means being responsible with the things that are close to you. Okay? There are lots of big things going on outside of Joseph that he can't control. At the beginning of the story, he's just a slave. All he can do is what people tell him to do. Okay? That's where he started. But he was continually responsible with what was put before him. Okay? Whether that was this much or whether that was the whole kingdom, he was continually responsible with what was there. And I think that applies to us. 2020 caught all of us off guard. I'm going to say this to me. I'm not the person that I needed to be good at living through this year, okay? But all I can do is start where I'm at. Fortunately, that's not a process that you have to take care of by yourself. James 1, 2-7 says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do." Because that's from James, you always got this little edge to it, right? At the end. With the Lord's help, there's no telling what you might accomplish, but it will not be without your effort. The Lord gave Joseph good gifts of character and favor and blessing, but he still had to do the work that was in front of him. Okay, point number two. Being out of context does not give you an excuse to sin. Okay, what do I mean by that? So this is talking about Joseph and Potiphar's wife, right? So the only people that would have known what was going on was Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Joseph is a long way from the place where he learned about God and where he learned what was right and wrong. None of those people would have known what happened. Okay? In that sense, he could have gotten away with it. But God would have known, right? Okay, so how does this apply to me? I am often guilty of giving myself a different set of rules to live by depending on where I'm at. If somebody sort of cuts me off on the way into the church parking lot, I'm not likely to flip them off and yell at them. Okay, I'm not all that likely to do that anyway, just for the record. Okay? But you have to behave. I have to behave the same way in Joplin when I'm talking to the person at the customer service desk at Walmart as I do when I'm dealing with my family here. Okay? Just because I'm interacting with somebody who either I have power over or who I may not see again, that does not give me an excuse to be a jerk. Okay? It's one of the gifts you have of living in a small town. We all have to live together. I'm going to see you at church on Sunday, right? And so even when I'm out of context, I still have to treat you like you're important and you have value because I know I'm going to see you again. Okay? The same thing applies to social media. Nod your head yes, please. That context is not any less, it's not any less of an area than sort of actually talking to people. Be nice to one another and don't live by different rules depending on where you are, okay? Point number three, adversity is not an excuse for inaction. Joseph got thrown down by life multiple times, and they were big falls. Joseph was the favorite son of a very wealthy man, okay? Jacob, his father. He went from that to being a slave. And then he went from the head of sort of the caretaker of one of the household of one of the most powerful people in Egypt to a prisoner. But whenever those things happened to him, he didn't mope and he didn't complain. He just picked himself up and kept doing what he was doing, what he was supposed to be doing. Now, is that because God blessed Joseph or because Joseph was a hard worker? I don't know. You ask Dr. Zustiak that question. He's much better paid and a lot smarter than me. You can ask Wes that question, also better paid and a lot smarter than me. They might have a better answer than me, but I think that those things are linked. I do believe that God will accomplish his larger purpose whether I've got the grit to stick with my part or not. But I desperately want to be useful in God's kingdom. I want to do a good job with my little corner, okay? I want to be the best husband and father and friend that I can be. Those are the roles that God has given me right now. All of you, from the little kids in here who are mostly asleep and doing a great job being quiet, guys. Good job. Although maybe I'd put you all to sleep. But anyway, everybody has roles. Everybody from the smallest person here to the oldest person here has their own little corner that God has put them in charge of. Okay? That's not a small thing. Do a good job. Apply the gifts, apply the energy, apply the stick-to-itiveness that God gave you to take good care of your little corner of the kingdom. And the last point you've all been waiting for. You don't know how your story ends. Okay? The most important thing maybe to realize about Joseph is that he didn't live through all the things that he lived through knowing that at some point, I'm going to be the number two man in Egypt. He didn't know how the story was going to end. Okay? He got to live through it without knowing the end. So do you. You don't know how your story will end. You have no idea how God can and will use you, okay? It took Joseph 13 years to get from the bottom of the cistern to riding in a chariot with people moving, with folks to move people out of his way, okay? You don't know how long it's going to take. You don't know what the plan is. All you can do is be faithful to what's in front of you. I will guarantee you four things. God loves you. God notices you. God thinks you are important. And the work that you do on behalf of his kingdom will be rewarded. I promise. Stand, please. Now may the God of peace himself sanctify you entirely. May your spirit and soul and body be preserved complete
without blame at the coming of our Lord Jesus. Faithful is he who calls you, and he also will bring it to pass.